August, would you ever open a hotel window if 50 people outside were shouting your name?
I would become very interested in the curtains. Michael Jackson did the opposite. Berlin, 19th November 2002. Fans are waiting below Hotel Adlon beside Brandenburg Gate. An upstairs window opens. Jackson appears in a red shirt, smiles and waves. He disappears, then returns carrying his nine-month-old child. What appears to be white cloth covers the child's head. Jackson steps towards the iron railing and for a few seconds holds the child outside it before bringing the child back into the room. Television cameras record everything. That evening, Jackson calls it a terrible mistake.
The image became infamous, but we are not going to inflate what the footage shows, guess what Jackson was thinking, or turn a child's danger into entertainment. We are looking at how those few seconds happened in that particular place, and why the hotel became part of what the world remembers.
This is Checked Into History, the podcast about moments when a hotel became more than an address. I'm August, that is Liv. I have the key card today, so let me give you the hotel before we return to the window. Hotel Adlon does not merely sit somewhere in central Berlin. It faces Pariserplatz, directly beside Brandenburg Gate, a square used as ceremonial entrance, political stage, and television backdrop. If a room faces the square, the distance between private life and public history is roughly the width of a curtain. The original Adlon opened in 1907 with the support of Kaiser Wilhelm II and placed luxury, diplomacy, and public display inside the same building. But the hotel Jackson visited was not an untouched survivor of Imperial Berlin. Most of the original was destroyed by fire in May 1945. A surviving wing remained in East Berlin until it was demolished in 1984.
After reunification, the Adlon was rebuilt on its historic site and reopened in August 1997. That makes the hotel in this story only about 5 years old, even though it carried one of Berlin's grandest names. It already had the old Adlon's job again, receiving heads of state, business leaders, and international stars at an address designed to be seen. For Jackson, the building offered two things that sound contradictory, but were central to his public life: a guarded interior, and immediate contact with an audience outside. The hotel did not make the choice that followed, but it gave the choice a stage.
The rebuilt hotel's confidence matters here. In 1997, Berlin was still learning how to present itself after reunification, and the Adlon returned with the manners of an institution that assumed it had never left. The name connected the new building to imperial ceremonies, diplomatic arrivals, and the vanished original, while its position beside Brandenburg Gate made every modern guest part of a much larger picture. Luxury hotels often promise escape from the city. The Adlon promises proximity to the city's most watched threshold. That is wonderful if a guest wants an entrance photographed, and more complicated if the same guest also needs genuine privacy. Jackson was 44 and in Berlin ahead of the Bambi Awards. 2 days after the hotel incident, he was due to receive a special award called Pop Artist of the Millennium, presented by Boris Becker. The visit also had a charitable context. An event connected to the awards raised money for homeless children in Germany, and one of Jackson's stage jackets sold for 16,000 euros. That timing makes the hotel image especially uncomfortable. He was being honored in an atmosphere focused partly on children, while television was broadcasting an image in which his own child had been placed in obvious danger.
We do not need to fill that contradiction with drugs, diagnoses, or a complete theory of Michael Jackson. We know why he was in Berlin, what cameras recorded, and what he said afterwards. We do not know what passed through his mind before he approached the railing. A factual account is not weakened by refusing to speculate. The documented action is serious enough. Jackson's life attracts enormous retrospective narratives, but if we import every later controversy, this particular visit vanishes beneath a biography we are not telling. The discipline here is one hotel, one documented visit, and one moment. There is another reason to keep the award and the hotel incident in the same week. Public fame does not move in a single direction. Jackson could be honored for a career associated with a charitable event and fiercely criticized for one dangerous decision almost at once. None of those facts cancels the others. The temptation is to arrange them into a clean rise or fall, because clean stories are easy to remember. The actual week is messier. a celebrated performer arrived at Berlin's grandest hotel, answered an affectionate crowd, made a serious mistake, and then walked onto an awards stage two nights later. History rarely waits for one version of a person to finish before presenting another.
The people outside were not casual passers-by. Contemporary Associated Press reporting described dozens of fans on the square, and security staff removed some people from the lobby. They knew where Jackson was staying and had come for a response. This was before a celebrity could acknowledge a crowd with a quick post from inside the room. If fans wanted immediate contact, they found the hotel and called towards the windows. Some carried signs linked to Jackson's charitable image. It was not a stadium-sized gathering, but everyone was watching the same facade. Any movement behind the glass could produce a roar.
Jackson appeared in a red shirt, smiling and waving, and threw down a small white towel or piece of cloth. The facade briefly became a physical social network. Audience below, public figure above, and cameras carrying the exchange far beyond the square. Jackson later said the fans asked to see his youngest child, and that he became caught up in the excitement. The crowd itself is independently documented. That specific request comes chiefly through Jackson's explanation. We do not have a clean transcript of individual voices. That distinction matters because a later explanation is evidence, but it is not the same thing as an independently recorded conversation.
The hotel also acted as an unofficial communications system. Fans did not need access to Jackson's room. They needed confidence that he was somewhere behind that facade. Security managed the boundary in the lobby, while the crowd negotiated it from the square by waiting, calling, and reacting to movement above. For the celebrity, acknowledging them could feel generous and controllable. Open the window, wave, close it again. But the audience included cameras, and cameras changed the scale of the exchange. The people Jackson could see were only the first audience. The much larger one arrived later through news broadcasts, detached from the warmth and excitement of the square. Jackson stepped back into the room and returned holding the nine-month-old child. Something white covered the child's head. Reports call it a cloth or a towel, and there is no reason for us to force greater precision. He moved towards the railing with one arm around the child's body, briefly extended the child outside or over the ironwork towards the people below, then pulled back and disappeared into the room. Published accounts disagree about the floor. Some say the third, others the fourth or fifth. Different European and American counting conventions may explain part of that disagreement, but the responsible answer is simple. The exact floor is uncertain.
This is where dramatic retellings often sharpen facts that do not need sharpening. The documented statement is already stark. An infant was briefly held on the outside of a high hotel railing. The footage does not establish that the child was slipping, so we do not say almost dropped. We can describe an obviously dangerous act without improving the footage. AP reported that people below cheered before Jackson went inside. That reaction feels disturbing in retrospect, but the crowd, and later television viewers, experienced different things. The people below were reacting in real time, from a distance and in the middle of an exchange with their idol. Television viewers received a selected image, replayed and framed as danger.
German and American broadcasters repeated the footage. In 2002, one television clip could lead bulletin after bulletin without millions of competing phone videos filling the screen. This image needed almost no translation. A global star, an infant, a railing, and a famous hotel. Viewers understood the risk before anyone had explained the award ceremony or even named the square. The footage also entered an existing media story. Jackson remained an enormous performer, but reporting on his private behavior increasingly rivaled reporting on his music. Editors used the scene as evidence of a familiar narrative, the isolated star for whom ordinary rules appeared suspended.
That is an interpretation of the media frame, not a diagnosis of the man inside it. The location made the hierarchy visually simple. Jackson stood above the crowd. They called his name. He decided what they could see, until the cameras took control. Jackson chose to appear and return with the child. Editors chose the cuts, presenters chose the language, and audiences watched long after the window closed. The square produced excitement. Television produced repetition. The architecture made the transition visible. Room as private interior, window as stage, railing as boundary. Once the footage left the hotel, there was no way to draw the curtain around it again. It is useful to remember how concentrated that broadcast system was. The footage did not have to compete with thousands of angles, live comments, and instant reaction videos. A relatively small number of broadcasters selected it, replayed it, and supplied the language through which viewers understood it. That gave the clip enormous visual consistency. People in different countries saw essentially the same few seconds. Today, a public incident fragments into rival edits almost immediately. The Adlon footage became powerful partly because it remained one recognizable image: the red shirt, the covered head of the child, the ironwork, and the pale hotel facade above a famous Berlin square.
A written statement followed that evening. Jackson called his action a terrible mistake, said he had been caught up in the excitement, and said he would never intentionally endanger his children. He did not deny the event or argue that the camera angle had created an illusion. The statement does not make the act less dangerous, but it does show that he publicly recognized it was wrong. A child welfare organization in the United States criticized the behavior while noting that the child did not appear to have been injured. Those two facts can sit together. Exposure to danger and reported physical injury are not the same thing.
No injury was reported, but the image became permanent. That raises an uncomfortable tension. The footage deserved criticism, yet the machinery of fame also turns a few seconds into a substitute for a whole person. Refusing that simplification cannot excuse the act. Condemning the act does not mean the camera recorded every truth about Jackson. The hotel survived the association more easily. 2 decades later, Berliner Zeitung observed that the pictures helped make the then-new, reconstructed Adlon known around the world. No hotel manager would design that publicity, but it did no lasting damage to the property's standing. Hotels absorb history, polish the brass, and continue checking people in.
A person's reputation and a hotel's reputation process scandal differently. For the person, the image can become a permanent shorthand. For the hotel, the same image becomes one item in a growing archive of arrivals, ceremonies, and stories. The Adlon could absorb the event because its identity was already larger than any single guest, even though the reconstructed building itself was young. Guests changed, rooms were refreshed, and the institution continued. That does not make the incident trivial. It shows why hotels are such durable containers for celebrity history. The human life moves on or ends, while the address keeps accepting reservations under the same illuminated name. 2 days later, the Bambi ceremony went ahead. Boris Becker presented Jackson with the Pop Artist of the Millennium Award, and photographs show him holding the small golden deer. The speed is difficult to take in. On Tuesday, footage from his hotel dominated international news. On Thursday, he was formally honored for his career. Both public versions existed at once: the artist behind Thriller and Billie Jean, and the man in that hotel window. It is tempting now to treat the Berlin scene as a clue in a story whose later chapters we already know. But history was not lived backwards.
People on Pariser Platz were not standing inside a future documentary. They were outside a hotel in November 2002, waiting for a glimpse of someone they admired. Staying inside that week matters, because otherwise, Hotel Adlon becomes decorative scenery beneath a celebrity biography. The more interesting question is why hotels so often become the place where fame's private and public versions collide. A star is away from home, but expected to be locatable, protected by staff, but surrounded by strangers. Inside a temporary private room whose address may already be known to the press and the public.
A hotel room feels private. The door locks and the curtains close. Yet it sits inside corridors, service doors, cameras, staff routines, and other guests who notice who arrives. At the Adlon, the room was also one curtain away from Brandenburg Gate. For a famous guest, a hotel can be both shelter and contact zone. The lobby may be a security problem, while a window seems like a controlled way to acknowledge fans. But the control is deceptive. A guest decides when the window opens. The guest does not decide what an image means once it leaves the room.
Jackson controlled the gesture. Cameras controlled its afterlife. That bargain now happens through phones and social platforms. But the underlying exchange is much older. A public figure offers access, the audience records it, and the moment becomes larger than its original setting. Hotels intensify that exchange because they collect people away from home, with routines disrupted and identities more performative. A temporary room may feel hidden even when the address is famous. Many people will have forgotten the award title, the presenter, and the charitable auction. They remember a balcony in Berlin and the name Hotel Adlong beneath the image. Let us leave a clean file. Documented. Michael Jackson stayed at Hotel Adlon during his Berlin visit in November 2002. Fans gathered outside. He appeared at an open window or balcony, acknowledged them, returned carrying his 9-month-old child, and briefly held the child outside or over the railing before pulling back. The event was filmed and repeatedly broadcast. He issued a statement that evening, calling the act a terrible mistake and saying he had been caught up in the excitement. No physical injury was reported. 2 days later, he received the Bambi Award, called Pop Artist of the Millennium.
That is also why the distinction between building brand and event matters. The original Adlon of 1907, the surviving East Berlin Wing, and the reconstructed hotel are not one untouched physical object. Yet the present hotel deliberately occupies the historic site and carries the old identity forward. Jackson's visit belongs unambiguously to the reopened property. When we say the hotel became part of the image, we mean this specific building in 2002, not a vague legend borrowed from its predecessor. The continuity is cultural and institutional. The physical history contains destruction, demolition, and reconstruction. Being exact about that makes the story richer, not smaller. Disputed or uncertain, the exact floor, because reliable accounts variously say the third, fourth, or fifth, and the precise words shouted by individual fans, because the claim that they asked to see the child comes mainly from Jackson's statement. Omitted, speculative explanations for his state of mind, unsupported drug claims, medical diagnoses, and private details about the child that are unnecessary to understand the event. Also omitted, almost dropped, because danger does not give us permission to claim a near fall the footage does not establish. Finally, Hotel Adlon did not cause the event. Its particular geometry created the stage for this particular image. Cause and stage are not the same thing.
Hotel Adlon carried on. Heads of state, artists, and business leaders continued to arrive. The building expanded, was renovated, and retained its place as Berlin's most symbolic luxury address. Jackson went on to Thursday's ceremony. But the world carried away Tuesday's few seconds. Not the full visit, not the auction, not the award. The window.
A life contains thousands of days, but public memory keeps a small folder of images, sometimes with a hotel name typed underneath. Sources, the full transcript, and our documented, disputed, and omitted notes are published with this episode at Celebrity Hotels, together with our Berlin Hotel Guide. The host performances use synthetic voices. The reporting and writing are human-directed and source-checked. Next time, Liv has the key card.
I have the next key card, and I promise, no Kaiser in the lobby. We'll check out here. The address stays.